Hi, I'm Brett Ryan. Coming up next, some great family and relationship advice on Focus on the Family.
We've known people in our life who have become Christians in part because they said they saw the gospel in our messed up but always forgiving, keep showing up marriage. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. When you can keep that perspective in mind, those bad times aren't so bad anymore.
That's Karen Eamon, and she and her husband Todd are with us again today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
I'm so grateful to have the Eamons back in our studio today. Last time we talked about God's purpose for marriage, that it's a picture of His relationship with us. We also discussed how to deal with a sandpaper spouse. That's a pretty good illustration of what can happen. And the trio of trouble that follows us into marriage, the baggage we bring in, the expectations, and our own perceptions. Karen and Todd were open and honest about their struggles, and after 30 plus years of marriage, they have great wisdom and insight into the institution of marriage.
And Karen has been with us before. She's a Proverbs 31 Ministries speaker and a New York Times bestselling author. Todd, this is his first time with us in this interview, and he is in the automotive industry, and together they call Michigan home and have three adult children.
Todd and Karen, welcome back to Focus on the Family.
Good to be here again. Thanks.
It was good, our discussion last time. I mean, it's funny, but it's so spot on what we talked about. Let's lay out some rules of engagement. So when we're talking about how we go about conflict and resolving conflict in our marriage, what are some of those rules?
Well, one, I think, is to believe the best and not assume the worst.
That's good.
Because our brains can always go to assuming the worst.
Now, let me ask you, why do we do it inversely? Especially as Christians, why do we assume the worst until you confirm to me?
You tell me. I've been doing it my whole life. I have to train my brain to not assume the worst.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
I mean, is that just our fleshly nature getting out in front of our spiritual nature?
It probably is.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we should know better.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So that's one.
In order to do that, we need to ask clarifying questions. So if something happens that kind of threatens to knock the nice out of you because of how they behaved or what they said, instead of just going right to the worst case scenario, believe the best about that person and ask questions like, okay, so when you said this, this is what I heard. Is that what you meant? Or when you said this, this is how it made me feel.
Okay.
Another thing that I have told myself, and this will be specific to wives, but husbands can make it specific to them too, is I tell myself, he's not just my husband, he's also my brother in Christ.
That's good. Todd, what about sticking to the facts? Is that one of the rules?
Sticking to the facts, well, sure, it would have to be for us.
Like, just tell me the facts, Karen.
Well, he does in that when I start getting off on my little tangents and I'm adding stuff to the story and trying to get historical, not hysterical. I get hysterical too, but historical and dredging up the past.
Which is one of your rules, actually.
Yeah, it is one of them. I think he's good at saying, let's just stick to what happened now. Because I tend to be colorful in my language and I kind of wander all over the place, you know. I'm one of these
people. You're painting a full picture.
Yeah, I'll tell you how to make a clock when all you ask me is what time is it, you know. So I think that he does in his own way say, we aren't going to talk about that. Let's talk about what happened now, not what happened 2 years ago. So in that way, I feel like he is kind of more of a stick to the facts guy.
Let me ask maybe the most crucial question here. How do you not let these things trigger you? You know, because again, we all have these triggers. So what are some of the questions you ask yourself in the heat of the moment, which slows you down in the trigger area?
I try to ask myself, well, first of all, does this really matter? You know, and for me, being a controlling person, am I just trying to get my way here and prove something or prove I'm right? Because I love to be right. Oh, man, do I love to be right? You know, but just because you even are right doesn't give you the right to act wrongly.
No, that's good. It's an important thing that you're filtering. I think a lot of husbands say that's a good lesson for all of us. But I think husbands particularly feel like, is that really important right now? Is that the most critical thing?
I think the way I protect myself in those times as far as the trigger points is I'll just always ask myself, I'll say, Karen, what is the issue? We learned a long time ago the issue is never the issue. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, maybe yesterday, that whatever she's upset about probably is not what she's upset about. It's something that just kind of made her top blow. So I'll say, Karen, what's going on? Is there something I've done, you know, in the past that recently that's triggered this? Because this is not usually an argument that we have or something you get upset about. So I assume the best and say,
yeah,
this is not the issue.
There's two ways you can ask that question. I'm guilty of the second, which you didn't mention. Which,
okay.
What have I done?
Oh,
mm-hmm. I've been completely innocent here. Yeah. Maybe not. But yeah. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I've said sometimes here, now what have I done?
So. Yeah. So is that an example of, I think, what you called, Todd, a flesh ball that you throw at somebody?
It is, exactly. Yes. Yeah. We react in the moment rather than thinking spiritually and thinking with control. We tend to ball up a flesh, which is of the nature, and just whip it right back. Yeah. And that's when it becomes an enemy against the enemy type of thing.
It feels so good to do
it
that.
It does feel good. Yeah.
It comes so naturally.
It does come natural.
Let me strike you with this flaming arrow called my tongue, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because those terms, I mean, they sound so funny, but we bring those up in our marriage so often. Like, we have what's called a file 13. It means this is an issue that's come up for the multi-millionth time before. Okay, file 13, we're having this discussion again, what's going on?
So okay, now I gotta
trigger
you,
those little things.
Yeah, what's in your file?
Oh, we have lots of files.
Well, give us one 13. Example, because it helps couples, because I, sorry, you brought it up.
Well, I think one of them just is the way we process conflict. Yeah. I want to talk now, he wants to talk later, and I'm like, no, we're talking now, and you know, here we go, file 13. You know, we're going to have this issue all the time.
So how do you resolve that? It seems like, you know, an unsolvable behavioral pattern between the two of you. So how do you solve that?
Well,
do you have to take a deep breath? Say, okay, later's fine.
Well, somebody's got to give. You know, in negotiations, the first thing, you know, with professional negotiators is finding common ground. And if, you know, one's way up here and one's way down here, you know, and neither's going to give, you're not going to go anywhere. So you have to, somebody's got to move. Hopefully both of you.
Does that mean that you'll say, okay, tomorrow at 2 we're going to talk about this? Because that, like, never works for us.
It doesn't?
No.
Why is that?
Something comes up. The kids will be there, or Dina will say,
date gets broken.
Dina will say, I can't possibly wait that
so
long.
So then you argue about when we should argue about
that's
something.
That's my point.
And there are those.
That's pretty funny, actually.
You argue about when you're going to argue.
There are those discussions, to be honest, for me, is I just walk away.
It's fatiguing.
And I guess that's where my avoidance, I think, becomes a strength, at least that moment. It's like, this is not even worth bothering about. It's not like the sun's going to go down. There's going to be a ton of anger. I think we do quite well with anger to some degree, that we don't let that go down on us.
We've learned to.
So there's sometimes you just walk away and you know it's going to be okay. I don't think you have to have a deep, heavy discussion on everything. And again, this is where marriages are so different as in parenting. You can't always rubber stamp and say, this is what you need to look like, smell like, and so forth. There's certain things that work in some marriages and not.
Well, it helps to experiment on what will work in your marriage.
And sometimes when he walks away, he's just like, we're just not going to deal with this now. He just walks away and I'm mad because I want to talk about it now. Then tomorrow I think, what were we going to talk about? Because I know I was mad about something, but
and I want to win.
Do you ever follow him and just not give him that chance?
No.
But Todd, I can relate to this, and let's try to put words to it, both for the husbands listening and for the wives listening. It's almost like when you're burning fuel, you know, you're in a normal relationship, there's so much caloric outburst that's going on, right? And then when you get into that conflict situation, whoo, like triples, I get tired. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I want to go hide. I want to curl up. I just don't want to burn at that rate right now. I've been burning at that rate all day at work. Mm-hmm. And I've come home and now all of a sudden I'm burning at this rate and something needs to be resolved. I don't want to deal with it right now. Mm-hmm. Go away. Mm-hmm. Is that the
feeling? I fatigue much quicker than Karen does in discussions. So like I said, if you're my temperament and have a tendency to want to walk away, there has to be a coming together, you know, common ground. So I'll say to myself, you know, Kieran wants to resolve this now. I want to resolve it in 4 days. I'll say, let's talk about this a little bit later. I think that's a happy medium for us. That's kind of how we resolve that.
When you and Todd go out to dinner, I think this is funny because we do this occasionally, but you'll observe other couples and how they're behaving with each other. It's kind of funny to confess that you do that. I don't know why. It seems weird. But you'll see people not talking, just going through the dinner, and you know they never speak a word to each other. And then you've got the couples that might be arguing about something, and then you got the, you know, the listener and the speaker, and it seems to go one direction. It's probably pretty rare that you see kind of this fluid conversation going back and forth where both are engaged. Is that fair? Is that what you've observed?
It is, and we actually play a little game about it.
Oh, well, that takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah, we call it married or matched. So when you see a couple out, are they married? Do we think they're married? They look maybe in their 40s. And we think they've been married, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. Or are they both single and they were just matched on a dating site?
Because they're really behaving?
Yeah, because they're really, the last scenario that you mentioned, there's conversation going both ways. They seem interested. And then I'll look and I'm like, neither of them have wedding rings on. They were just matched. I might be completely wrong, but.
No, but what does that say to you? I mean, that is speaking volumes. What does it say to you?
Yeah, that old familiarity breeds contempt is kind of true sometimes when you've been married for a long, long time and now you're together with each other out on a date that's supposed to be like a date. So the purpose of it is to spend time and converse and interact. It's easy to just look at your phone.
So the big question is, how do you reframe romance in that context and do better engaging each other, not just kind of laying back and this is the 1400th time we've had dinner and I've run out of things to say.
Well, what works for us, again, I think marriage is as different as raising kids in a lot of ways, is I think what we tend to do is Karen will say, you know what, I just need to talk to you. Nothing's wrong. You've done nothing wrong, Todd. Everything's good with us or whatever, but I want to talk. So I consciously say to myself, okay, we're gonna go out and we're going to talk, which we just did this other day. It was like an hour and a half talk. She was just talking about life and then I talked about life. But when we go out to dinner, you know, when guys go out, we can go out and have no contact, eye contact, and talk about anything and still feel like we bonded. It's like if I were to drive my son to school and then my wife would say to me, well, what do you guys talk about? Nothing. What do you mean you talked about nothing? You're in a car for 3 hours. We talked about nothing. How can you talk about nothing? But it was the greatest time we ever had. Right. Just took a trip with my son backpacking. We didn't talk a lot, but we're together. It was a great thing. So if we go out to dinner, sometimes we don't say anything. Okay, that puts us in the category. There must be a boring old set of, you know, a married couple. But it's we don't have to always talk about something. I think she's coming to my side that even when we take long trips, Todd doesn't like to talk a lot, so I'm not going to talk. It works out okay. There's time to say, I just really need to talk. Then I respect that and we talk.
Well, and I've had to learn that just him stopping his schedule to be with me, even if he's not saying anything, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
He could be doing, he loves to do yard work. He's just great at keeping stuff up around the house, and he just likes to do projects all day long and just dink around and not talk to a soul. So when he'll stop that to go out to dinner with me, I have to tell myself, you know, just him being here with me is a big deal. I don't need to have him solve all of the world's problems with me like I would like to
do. This seems, and again, let's follow this bunny trail a little bit, because let's just put it in the categories. A lot of women might be really frustrated with their quiet husbands, and they're feeling like there's something that I'm not doing because my husband doesn't seem interested in what I have to say. And then you ruminate on that. And then you create a lot of imaginary motivations that probably are not accurate. And you sit there and think about that. And then you're upset with him. And the poor guy doesn't even know what. I mean, the tank is fired and your bow and arrow isn't even, the arrow's not in the quiver yet. And the shell's exploding right next to you. You're going, what's going on? How can you vent that? Honey, I need you to respond to me when we're talking. I mean, Gene has said this, you know, there's physical intimacy, which is so important to you, man, and then I need emotional intimacy. And that's a big tripwire that God has put there for some reason. And how do you get across that line that, you know, as husbands, we need to realize our wives need this emotional intimacy that we struggle to give.
Well, I think the first thing is to package that conversation in a way where you're not telling them that they're doing it wrong. Like, you never talk and you don't open up and you're wrong.
Right.
But just say, this is how you roll. And sometimes I need you to roll a little different way because I need to talk. I need to have you give me your thoughts. I want to know what you're thinking about this issue with the kids or with the new house we're saving to buy or which way we should go with this financial decision or whatever. I need you to engage. And so I know that's not how you normally roll, but can you try just for
me? Okay. And then I'm telling you, some guys are looking at you going, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that come with a manual? Can you tell me what that means?
Well, then just say, can you at least answer some questions? I will pose the question to you and you can answer it, right? I'm not going to make you come up with conversation from the get-go.
This isn't combat.
No, it's not. It's just, what do you think
about
this?
But you got to say that.
Yeah. And so I'm going to give you some scenarios, or I'm going to throw some questions your way. And could you just answer the question so I know what you're thinking? Because we can't read our spouse's mind. And they might think we know what they're thinking, but how do we know if they never open their mouth and tell us?
I've had to say that sometimes to my wife is, I know you are thinking a lot, but I can't read you right now. So I need you to help me understand. Because otherwise, it's going to become a conflict because I'll ask the wrong question or I won't ask the right question at all. And then you're relating to this.
Yes, Todd. Yeah, exactly. That's how we tend to be sometimes. Like, I can't, it's like it's a no-win situation sometimes in marriage. You know, I'm doing the wrong thing, I'm doing the right thing. Well, what do you need me to do? You know, just women are just so different. She feels differently this way. She wants to communicate different today differently than
you mean
she
it
did
changes?
Yesterday. Yeah, it changes.
Okay, that's a complicating layer.
And maybe, you know, maybe having those conversations with a man might be, it's very intimidating for a man to sit down and have a heart-to-heart with a wife.
Let me go here. What are some ways we can unearth, I guess we could call it that magic when we're living our everyday lives? And then it's that expectation issue, too, that, you know, one person's magic is beyond my ability to deliver. I mean, I don't know. But speak to that idea of, you know, keeping your romance fresh and how do we do that after 20 years, 30 years for us? I mean, we've been married 33 years and you guys are over 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do it?
Well, the first tip I would give might seem kind of strange, but I'm going to say it. Stay off of social media sometimes. When you are looking at other people and their marriages and they're out to a fancy dinner while you're warming up leftovers, or they got a new upgraded diamond ring and it's strategically in the Instagram shot or whatever, and you're thinking, you know, he doesn't get me jewelry. I think it's really dangerous for us to be looking at other people's marriages and then sizing up your own and seeing how it falls so
especially
short.
One photo at a time.
Yeah.
Because you're getting
I'm
a snapshot.
Serious. I've had women that just, you know, have voiced this displeasure and this despair about their marriage. And when I'll say, well, what's going on? And it's really, there's really not a ton going on. It's just that they think someone else has got it better because the grass always looks greener on the other side. And so if you're constantly exposing yourself to all these perfect marriages and perfect romantic things.
Which they are not. Trust me. There's no perfect anything.
No, it's not. But we think it is. We know what's happening in the reality behind our four walls of our house. And we perceive, again, that somebody else has it perfect. And then we don't measure up and we get depressed. So I think you need to just, I'm not saying delete your accounts, but just be careful.
Healthy and good is the goal. Just be healthy and good.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also finding out like Karen's interests. I'm kind of against the, you know, when someone says, well, write down all your needs, and then she writes down all her needs, and then you share those, and then you basically meet those needs. Well, first of all, we're human. We're sinful. That's not going to happen. That becomes a major issue. It's the expectation. Why is she not meeting my needs? Well, I'm going to withhold what she wants from me on my list. So I'm not a real fan of that unless you're really mature in your marriage. You really can talk through that and walk away and say, okay, aunt, nothing. Expect nothing whatsoever. Whatever they give is great. But there are things that with Karen, I need to find out that she does have an interest in some things, whether it be just go out for an ice cream, enjoy the time together doing something like that.
Sounds like talking might be a good first step.
Talking might be a good thing. But at least connecting with some of the things that are her love languages. I know that's a hot word. But knowing, she has to know I'm not going to fulfill every single love language she has. I'm going to fall short every day and every moment.
Well, and this hits that expectation issue. So, Karen, knock it out of the park.
Exactly. So when we expect nothing, we can't be disappointed, right?
Right.
So we got to just tell ourselves, lower your expectations. And then how you find the magic in the mundane is you look for it in unexpected places, not where you think you're going to find it. I think I'm going to find the magic when he just verbally tells me how wonderful I am and how wonderful dinner was and how great the house looks and
did
how
I tell
amazing.
You how nice your hair looked today?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think that's where he's going to give it to me is in all the verbal stuff. That's not how he rolls. I need to just say, Lord, I know he loves me. Help me to see it. Just a very simple prayer.
Yeah.
And so where I see it is every time I get in my vehicle, just about, my gas tank is full. Because that's one thing he just does. When he's filling up his tank of gas, he thinks, oh, I wonder if Karen needs a gas, and he'll take my, doesn't even tell me, he just drives away in my car. I'm like, where's he going? He keeps my gas tank full. He's great at picking up the kitchen, doing dishes without me nagging or being, you know, or asking
him. You had to say that one, didn't
you? Yeah, well, you know, there. See, these people listening, there, it's there. It might not be dishes in a full gas tank, but I think when we as spouses look for the ways that our husbands or our wives do show us love, it's just not the way that we thought they would or that we hoped they would. But they are doing things that are showing love. And for him, it's acts of service. For me, it's words of affirmation. We speak two different languages. I've had to learn to interpret and go, wow, he does love me. Look at that. One time when I was flying home in the winter to the airport in Lansing, Michigan, and we had just had 6 inches of snow, he had driven to the airport and scraped off my car on his way to work. He was working nights that time of our life. And I got to that car and I cried. I thought, oh, he does love me. Even if he doesn't say it, he does. No, you got to look for it.
No, that's good. I think that admonition to keep your expectations, I would say reasonable. I mean, there's always going to be a desire that we're connecting, and that's healthy and good.
Yes.
Can't be so low that, you know, I spend no time with my spouse.
Right.
That's ridiculous. But I like that idea. The critics will say, no, you need to have higher expectations. But I reinforce that all the way. And I think that's when you know humanity, if you know we're sinners saved by grace and we're all starting there, even in our marriages, your husband or your wife is not going to meet all of your expectations. They're not going to be Jesus to you. I mean, he's perfect. We're not. If you can start there, you're starting in a much healthier place, anticipating that there will be letdowns, there will be communication issues, there's going to be other issues that we'll encounter. And it's how do we manage those? Communication is what you're saying, and make sure the rules of engagement are correct.
Mm-hmm. And when we can remember that marriage isn't about making us happy and, you know, finding that other half that just, you know, makes you happy. But marriage is all about showing the gospel to the watching world, because your marriage is a message and people are watching you preach. It's not just pastors that deliver a sermon.
Right.
And we've known people in our life who have become Christians in part because they said they saw the gospel in our messed up but always forgiving, keep showing up marriage. That's what it's about. When you can keep that perspective in mind, those bad times aren't so bad anymore.
Right. Because and it's life.
They're showing. Yeah, it's life. It happens. You get through it. You work through it. There are hard times. There are good times. But people can see that keeps showing up, offering grace and forgiveness, and starting every morning, we're going to try it again. We're going to stay married for one day. And if we get to the end of the day, well, we're going to do it all over again tomorrow.
Karen, you have a sign in your office. What does the sign say, and why is it significant?
It says June 21st, 1986. And then under that, it says 221 guests. Because there were 221 people at my wedding when I said my vows to this man, who I stood in front of and said, and I stood in front of the Lord, more importantly, and said, till death do us part, for better or for worse. And sometimes when I'm more in the worst parts and I want to just throw in the towel, and again, I'm not talking about serious situations where people do have grounds for divorce. That's not what I'm saying. But just those normal bumps of marriage where you get frustrated, where you think, what in me ever thought it was a good idea to marry this man who's so different from me and driving me crazy? I can walk by my office and I see that sign and I say, no. On that day, I stood before the Lord and before those people, and I said, I am going to keep showing up. And so it kind of gives me this renewed, you know, vow that it's not just this person who's driving you crazy. There are other people involved who are watching my marriage, and I'm going to keep showing up for them too.
Even in your voice, I hear the emotion of that. Is that commitment? What is that I'm hearing?
Yeah, and I think just because I grew up around a lot of marriages that didn't survive, and we've had friends. I mean, I was thinking the other day, we used to lead a Bible study where there were eight couples. It was a marriage Bible study. Only three of them are still married.
Yeah.
You know, we've just seen it. So many people you hit a bump in the road and you think, I must have picked the wrong person. This one's not my soulmate. And they just chuck it and they go try to find happiness somewhere else. And rarely does that ever make them happy
either. They take all the same baggage along with
them. They do. Instead of saying, look, I made this commitment. It's hard. Marriage is hard, but it's not about me. It's about something bigger. What's it about again? Oh, yeah, the gospel.
Yeah.
I can keep doing it.
Karen, I so appreciate that. And I know, Todd, you're right there with her.
Well, there's more joy in 30 years of marriage than there is in 2 days of marriage.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
There's
so maturity.
Much emotion and so much thrill. And, but in 30 years, I can say it's a greater, richer love, even though we still get on each other's nerves at times.
That's good. I really do appreciate this. It's been great to hear from both of you. And I love your book, Keep Showing Up, How to Stay Crazy in Love When Your Love Drives You Crazy. Karen and Todd, let me thank you again for being with us.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Thanks again for having us.
I so appreciate Todd and Karen Eamon and their candor in sharing their struggles and the joys of their journey, and hope you've been encouraged to keep showing up, if you will, with your spouse and to enjoy the ride. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
For a copy of today's broadcast and other helpful resources, visit our website at families.org.au. And remember, Focus on the Family Australia is on Facebook.